We are recording a day later, but there is no shortage of topics around the National Hockey League. We talked the Trevor Zegras, Jay Beagle incident, Austin Matthews maybe hitting 70 goals, Keith Yandel's Iron Man streak is broken, records falling all over the place, and Ryan Getzlaff is going to hang him up after this season. All that and more here on episode 127 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. April the 6th. It's the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Kyle Gamard, your host, as always. Thank you for your patience, by the way. Normally, of course, we record these on Tuesdays, but yesterday I was in Toronto for a couple things. By the time I got home and everything played itself out, it didn't add up for me to try and do the podcast that late, so I decided to come in fresh today. And honestly, it probably was better for me to record today because I got a little bit more perspective on a lot of things we're going to be talking about today. And of course, the Ryan Getzlaff news comes out, and that wouldn't have been on the show, or would have had to gone back and done something. But nevertheless, I am happy that you are here with me. Instagram and Twitter, ST Hockey Podcast, as always, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. I'm noticing, as I'm seeing on my numbers, it's a lot more on Apple Podcasts, which at first it was a lot more even, but now it's a lot more dominated on Apple Podcasts. So I do appreciate you listening in. But regardless, a lot of topics that we're going to get to today on the episode. We will start with the Trevor Zegras and Jay Beagle incident. We'll talk Matthews and the Leafs actually a little bit later on. Keith Yandel and his Iron Man streak and what that means and my thoughts on it. And a bunch of records falling this year and just some insane statistics that are going on. I don't know if you're aware of them, but I wanted to bring them to light and see how you felt on the matter. But we're packed and loaded, ready to go today. So I will kick it off here with the incident that took place on this past Friday between the Anaheim Ducks and the Arizona Coyotes. I am going to try and break this up into three separate parts, three separate pieces of audio that I have so that it flows, makes a little bit more sense, and that I'm not all over the place, because I had a lot of thoughts on this and I had an opportunity to listen to multiple podcasts. I listen to the Chris Johnson Show, 32 Thoughts, the podcast, the Steve Dangle podcast, Spit and Chicklets. I listen to all of them. I heard all their takes on what they had to say on this, and I kind of have an understanding of where everything falls. But before we get into it, here's the clip first. We're going to start with part one. This is the audio of the actual incident that took place on Friday night.
Jay Beagle caught Troy Terry with a couple.
That's the problem sometimes with these young players. You want to embarrass guys and you want to skill it up, you better be prepared to get punched in the mouth.
So here was the incident broken down. Anaheim Ducks star Trevor Zegras wasn't happy after teammate Troy Terry got, well, there's no better word to put it, pummeled in a fight against the Arizona Coyotes and Jay Beagle. The game was 5-0 Anaheim. It was a blowout. Trevor Zegras thought the puck was loose, tried to poke at it in front of the net. When you poke the goaltender, right, you get a little bit of a pushback. This was not a little bit of a pushback. This was an all-out brawl and a full fisticuffs that went in between Beagle and Terry. Terry, and the photo's been going viral, has his face ballooned to the point where I don't think he can really see out of his left eye. Now, from the incident alone, right? And again, I don't want to go too crazy here because Trevor Zegras talks about, we have that audio in just a second, but Trevor Zegras talks about poking the goaltender and knowing he's going to take a shot. And when you go at the goaltender, right, you always get a little bit of whatever you're giving, it gets reciprocated back to you. As a goaltender, I've played in the GMHL. You can look at my stats. They're awful. I had like a 4 goals against. My save percentage was okay. It was like 8.98 or something. I got poked, snowed, run into, bumped, speared, whatever the case may be. It always led to a little bit of rough stuff. But never when I played, and again, it's 1 year of junior. I haven't played in the NHL or anything like that. But in the year that I played, There was never an incident that resulted in one guy absolutely pummeling another guy, let alone the leading goal scorer on the Anaheim Ducks and Troy Terry. From listening to all the other podcasts, the one unanimous point that I heard from everything was that it got taken way too far by Beagle. Now, I don't know if it had to do with the fact that you're losing 5-0. I don't know if it had to do with the fact that, you know, it was Zegras and Terry who were in on it, and Zegras scored the Michigan goal again, by the way, which, how are we burying the lead on the fact that Trevor Zegras multiple times in a season scored the Michigan goal in which he picked up the puck with his stick and wrapped it around the net and then wrapped it around his own player in Sonny Milano? I can't believe that we're somehow burying that lead, because this is the story that's now dominating. Now, dominating, I'm using lightly because it's Wednesday, so we are now, what, 4 days, 5 days after this happened originally, which sucks, and that's why I wanted to do this yesterday, but anyways. The fact that that's not the story is mind-boggling to me in the first place. And the unanimous response from everything that I heard was that Beagle went way too far in this situation. Now, as I transition, here's part two. And this is what Trevor Zegras had to say on the matter and what he saw and what his mindset was.
I'm not going to name the player, but I get that he's going to punch him maybe once. But the fact that he's down and he's not engaged in a fight, you're going to hit him three more times, I think it's embarrassing. I think he should be embarrassed. I'm not going to comment any further on whether or not I think he should have even been able to get to Troy while he was on the ice. But I'm embarrassed that it even got that far. I appreciate Troy sticking up for me, because I think that's a nonsense cross-check with 2 minutes left in a 5-0 game. I'm embarrassed for whoever that was. I'm not going to say his name. And I think the league should step in here and do something about it.
Was the puck loose when you kind of jabbed at it?
100% loose. And I get you're going to hit me in the back, but you don't punch a guy when he's down, especially a 32-goal scorer in the NHL who's a superstar. I think it's embarrassing. I think it's a bad look for the league. And for the player that did it, it's humiliating. And I think he should be punished.
So the one part I love about this is that Zegras doesn't name Jay Beagle. He says, I'm not going to name the player. I'm not going to give him the time of day, which shows the lack of respect that he now has towards Jay Beagle. And from what I heard from all the podcasts, from people who have talked to him, and I'm not one of them, but other shows and whatnot and individuals who have interacted say that Jay Beagle seems like a very nice and respectable guy. Right, was on that Washington Capitals playoff team, and was it 2018 or 2019? 2018. And was a big reason why they were able to go there, and then he got paid. And then, you know, unfortunately, with the situation in Vancouver, they need to alleviate some cap. He's part of a dump. They go to Arizona. In return, they get Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Connor Garland and all that. But the one point I want to point out, Trevor Zegras says, I went to poke at the puck. He said he thought the puck was loose, so he poked at him. And his response was, I knew I was going to get at least a shot in the back. I knew Terry was going to get at least a punch. The dude was anticipating taking a shot in the back. He was preparing for it. Like, he knew, if I dig a little bit at the goalie, I'm taking a cross check in the back, because that's just the way it is. And sure, it's how the game is. I totally understand that. But mentally, he was ready for it. So it's not like this didn't come out of nowhere, and he nor Terry weren't aware of the consequences that come when you drive the net and try to jam the puck home. They're fully aware of it. The argument was, when Terry was down and clearly not fighting back, the need for Beagle to throw three more punches at Troy Terry, who is the leading goal scorer for Anaheim. Later that weekend, by the way, Jay Beagle played for the Arizona Coyotes. Troy Terry did not. Now, the nice thing that I did hear is that the injury is not nearly as bad as everyone thought. But at some point, Terry was walking around. Apparently, they're playing. couldn't leave Arizona because they were waiting because Troy Terry was getting examined and looked at and treated. And it bothered a lot of the Ducks players. Good for Trevor Zegras, by the way, to go in and call out Beagle without actually saying his name and the player safety department for saying he should be embarrassed. The league should be embarrassed for allowing this to happen and for no consequences, because now we're on to Wednesday, April the 6th, and nothing has happened. We have seen little shots to the head where players have gotten right back up and been fined, been suspended for multiple games. Players have sucker punched players in the side of the head without looking and have been at least fined. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Another week goes by and another week we're on this podcast talking about the same damn thing. The same damn thing. And let me paraphrase for a second. Let me preface here. I'm all for the NHL being physical, for standing up for your teammates, for standing up for your goaltender. Hell, I was a goaltender. I get it. My best friends were the defensemen or guys that were clearing the way for me. I love them. But I never advocated for them to come in and pummel the dude for taking one poke at the puck. You are also aware of that as a goaltender when you play, that as you cover the puck, there could be a half second timing where you cover it and a player is going for it and they just happen to catch your glove. It happens. And that player gets grabbed afterwards and pulled aside. Speaking of grabbing and pulling aside, if you haven't seen the clip yet, shout out to Louis Erickson for grabbing a hold of Trevor Zegras and keeping him out of the melee. Because God forbid something happened to him. God forbid. Louis Erickson the whole time. Trevor Zegras is trying to go and fight Beagle, who had just pummeled Troy Terry. And I'm not saying that he pummeled Troy Terry as in like Troy Terry, you know, is soft and didn't fight back. Troy Terry wasn't wanting to fight. He's like, I've got 32 goals this season. You have one. 31 goals, sorry. Zegras said 32. He's got 31. And Louis Erickson grabbed Zegras and held onto him. The first guy, if you watch the clip, go around. He finds Zegras and basically bear hugs him. Says, you are not going in there. You are not ruining your season. And God forbid something happens to you. I played a shinny game on Monday. And multiple times, guys tried to pull the Michigan on me. Multiple times. You want to know why that happened? Because of Trevor Zegras. Trevor Zegras apparently wasn't supposed to be invited to the All-Star game, according to Elliot Friedman from 32 Thoughts. Troy Terry was the one. But the NHL said, nah, we got to get this guy here. He's too good. And what did he do? He did the dodgeball reference where he was dodging balls from like all the mascots and then scores blindfolded. You don't think that's good for the league? That's the question that needs to be asked. What is good for the league? And then again, this isn't what is a part of the league. It's what is good for the league. Is taking a 31 goal scorer and a one goal scorer this season and having the one goal scorer beat the pulp out of the 31 goal scorer because he's getting embarrassed on the ice? Because, and again, we'll get to the reasoning afterwards. Is that good for the sport? You're taking a 31 goal scorer out. Think of all the 30 goal scorers right now, or guys who don't even have 30. Mitch Marner just hit 30 yesterday. Is it good for the game if Mitch Marner misses time because of injury? No. Is it good that Johnny Gaudreau misses time because of injury? Because he's a 30 goal? No. It's not good for the game. And this not being policed, by the way, is also not good for the game. So I respect what Trevor Zegras had to say. I really do. I love the fact that he called out the NHL, called out the Department of Player Safety, and he called out Beagle without even saying his name. And by the way, okay, you know what? Before I get into anything, here's part three of this. And this is the audio from Tyson Nash. And we're going to get to him in a second. But here's the audio of Tyson Nash. So during the first clip, Tyson Nash says, quote, you want to skill it up. You want a dipsy doodle, and he sounds so dated, right? And he took a lot of heat for the broadcast. I retweeted it. A lot of people tweeted it out just saying it was just a really bad take. So he went on, I think it's Craig Morgan's Phoenix Coyotes podcast, which is hilarious because they're called the Arizona Coyotes now. And he, quote, air quotes, clarified what he meant. This is what he had to say.
Well, first of all, I appreciate you reaching out and actually doing some homework and asking me, wanting my opinion on what I meant. A lot of people didn't do that. They were quick to fire off after just listening to a small snippet of, you know, one thing that I said on the broadcast. If you would have been able to follow the story from start to finish, these guys have, and the highlight reel goals that they scored and did score, end up scoring in the game. If you would have heard my call on the broadcast after the goal and all the things that I said, I'm all about the skill. That is not even close to the truth and what I was trying to say. All I was trying to say was the fact that, listen, this is a really skilled player. You know, when instead of maybe saying, you know, if you want to skill it up, I should have said hot dog it up. And maybe that would have been a better thing to say. But, you know, listen, this is a team that came in. They lost 11 games in a row. They're winning 5-0 in the other team's building. And what people don't see and what they didn't see and that I did see, it's the smirks. It's the celebration after the goal. It's the taunting. It's the smiling at the other team's bench. And then it's the poke. You poke the goalie. And, Craig, this has been going on for 1,000 years in the National Hockey League. 1,000 times a year it happens. You poke the goalie, usually something occurs afterwards. Why Trevor Zegras was in there poking the goalie in a 5-0 game is absolutely beyond me. And that's all I said. If you're going to, you know, do what you did throughout the game, and with the smiling and the smirking, which I saw, which doesn't always show up on TV clearly, then that is what you have to be prepared for. And
to be clear, you were between the benches, right?
I had the best seat in the house. I'm between the benches. I watched the interactions of the players all game long. And I love this kid. Absolutely love him. Everything about him. I love the cockiness. I love the swagger. But I'm just saying, if you're going to do some certain things throughout the game, there are consequences still in the National Hockey League. And the hot dogging is, again, probably the word and the term I should have used on the broadcast instead of skilling it up.
It means
because it makes me sound like I don't enjoy the skill of the NHL, which could be not farther from the truth. I mean, I love everything about it. But also, like, when I played, Joel Quenneville didn't allow me on the ice in the last 5 minutes of a game. Because I was always yelling and smirking and chirping at the other bench. So he was trying to save my life, right? But I also knew that because I did that, I had to be prepared at all times to know what might be coming. And in my mind, if anyone's to blame in all of this, I mean, it's Trevor Zegras. Like, I've seen, and I just don't know why he was in there poking the goalie at that time of the game.
So this is Trevor Zegras' fault now. Right? It's Zegras' fault. Because he poked at a loose puck. Because the game was 5-0. And your feelings got hurt because you were getting embarrassed because they were, God forbid, celebrating after goals. God forbid in the National Hockey League, you're not allowed to celebrate a goal. God forbid. God forbid Alexander Ovechkin ever celebrating a goal. Have you watched Alexander Ovechkin before? That dude has celebrated all 765 goals that dude has scored ever. God forbid. Back to the original point he makes. Tyson Nash says he's all about the skill. He's all about the skill. And then he says, these are the phrases that he said. I wrote these down. Skilling it up. He should have said hot dogging it up because that's better. And he's all about the skill. These are terms and words literally used by Nash. And prior to, he says, if people actually listened to the whole thing, they would hear that. And then immediately contradicts what he says by saying, if you got these guys running around and hot dogging it up, there's consequences. You just said the whole reason that this started was because of the poke by Zegras. But now it's because, you know what I mean? Like, you contradict everything you said here. Let me just tell you right here. Tyson Nash, and I'm sure he's a wonderful guy. Tyson Nash in his career played roughly seven seasons. He was like a 200 plus pick in the NHL. It's like 10th round. He played in 374 games, which is actually really good for a 10th round pick. And he had a combined 64 points. He had nearly 700 penalty minutes. Troy Terry alone this season has 57, and he probably would have caught him had he not taken three sucker punches in the head for trying to do the thing that the whole sport is based around, which is put the puck in the net. And Troy Terry has done that 31 times this season. That's more goals than Nash ever had in his career. Nash had 27 combined goals his whole career. Terry this year is 31. He went on to clarify his words, which didn't help him in the slightest. You cannot say when guys, quote, skill it up, that they're going to get beat up and then come right on afterwards saying, I'm all about the skill. It contradicts everything you say. It's a complete counteractive point against your previous statement. And before everything, you basically called everyone out who was calling you out, saying that they don't listen to the whole broadcast and that they need to go back and do it so that they better understand it. You're not radioing yourself. If you don't know what the term radioing is, it's having an entire point and then getting a tiny little clip taken from it and then used against you and having it used in a completely different manner. I just played you 2 straight minutes of him talking. None of it's clipped. None of it. Listen, I love having former players on broadcasts bringing their analysis and point of view. I love it. They bring a perspective that nobody else has because they've played in the NHL. Some are great at it. Kevin BX is great at it. I don't know if you've seen a Chicago Blackhawks broadcast. Patrick Sharp's phenomenal at it. He breaks the game down so well. Paul Bissonnette, Biz Nasty from Spit and Chicklets. Ryan, those guys bring, they have this personality, this energy. They do such a great job. They are phenomenal at what they do. Here's the problem. When you cannot articulate what goes on in your head and utilize it properly and have it come out a certain way, it gets butchered to no end. He thought saying the word and term hot dogging it up was a literal upgrade from skilling it up. You sound like a dinosaur who's not caught up on all of the fads and trends going around. You sound like a 40-year-old dad who's trying to be cool to his 15-year-old kid. You're just not cool. You just don't get it. And it drives me friggin' nuts as a broadcaster. I went to school for this. I studied this. I majored in talk, announcing, and writing. I have been practicing this craft for a decade. I have 6 pages of notes for this one podcast that I do on the side of my full-time job as a morning show host on a radio station that gets heard by tens of thousands of people every morning. I have statistics written down, I do research, I have attention to detail, and I practice how I'm going to approach each and every topic. It goes to show that he, one, was caught up in the emotion, and two, had a very lack of attention to detail and preparation that went into it. Even after getting hammered online and then going on a podcast and thinking that you just corrected yourself when you absolutely didn't. That's my opinion, but as a broadcaster, I feel like I'm entitled to one. And you wrap the whole thing up in a beautiful bow by saying, the guy that wasn't even involved in the fight, it's your fault. I don't understand why the NHL and commentators and people, this is the only league which punishes your stars. Right? And what, by the way, what type of player was Tyson Nash? I'll tell you what type of player he was. In 374 games, he had a grand total of 64 points and over and almost 700 penalty minutes. I'll tell you who he is. He's Jay Beagle. Doesn't score a lot of goals, didn't get a lot of points, third, fourth line guy. And again, I've never played in the NHL. I cannot attest and I cannot say how incredibly difficult it is to not only play, but have a somewhat extended career in the NHL. I cannot attest to that. But Tyson Nash is looking at this scenario. And this is, by the way, I'm using this as a reference as what I heard on 32 Thoughts, the podcast. And this is, I think, Jeff Merrick's point. But he looks at this and he looks at and goes, where can I insert myself in this situation? It's Jay Beagle. He's inserting himself into where Jay Beagle is. Anaheim had lost 11 straight games. 11 straight. And they go in and they're winning a game 5-0. Obviously, they're going to celebrate scoring. Obviously, things are clicking. So when the puck's jammed around the net, they are trying to jam it in. It doesn't mean take the leading goal scorer and pummel his face in when he's not fighting back. It's not rocket science, guys. I have never seen a league. The NFL protects its stars. They literally change the rules so that you cannot hit a quarterback a certain way. The NBA promotes its stars because it sells. I've never seen the NHL. I've never seen a league not promote their stars. They punish them. This is okay. And you want to know why it's okay? Because the player of safety department didn't do anything about it. Nobody talked about it. Nobody made a statement. After Trevor Zegras spoke about it, crickets. And Tyson Nash, who talked about it and the hockey culture and he was a part of it, and you just got to pay the piper, which, by the way, Zegras and Terry were prepared for. Trevor Zegras literally said, I go to poke the puck because I thought it was loose. I'm preparing to take a shot, maybe a punch. These guys know hockey culture. They were ready for it. But you can't just go berserk because you're getting embarrassed 5-0. And one of the most skilled players in the game scored the Michigan against you. Guess what? Don't get embarrassed 5-0. Don't be one of the worst teams in the league. Maybe it's a one-off for Beagle, but the announcer said on the broadcast, I've never seen Jay Beagle like this. Never seen him like this all season. Because he blew up. And he reacted. And he went way too far. I know this is 5 days late. I know I wanted to get this on the show yesterday, but the hypocrisy I heard coming out of Tyson Nash's mouth and the fact that he is a broadcaster on the National Hockey League level is embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And then he goes on a podcast to clarify his statements, and he sounds like a dinosaur. He sounds like a 40-year-old dad trying to be cool to his 15-year-old son and has no idea of any of the lingo, terms, fads, trends, whatever the case may be. I will reiterate, he used the phrases in like a 2-day span or 3-day span, skilling it up or skill it up, hot dogging it up, which apparently was the better term to use by his words. And I'm all about the skill. I'm all about the trends. I'm all about the internets on the Facebook. You're outdated, man. And you did no favors to yourself whatsoever. It drives me nuts as a broadcaster. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. My gosh. I knew I was going to get fired up. I didn't think I was going to get that fired up over it, but holy smokes. I got to get a guest on next week. I'm going to bring a guest on and go over it because, oh my God. I want to transition here, and this will be the last piece of audio that I play. And it has to do with Keith Yandel, and this past Saturday, his Ironman streak comes to an end. He gets healthy scratched. 989 is the number. And in that game, he got scratched for rookie Ronnie Attard, who is a 23-year-old third-round selection by the Penguins back in 2019. He's now played in two games, plays about 15 minutes a night, and, you know, right now played a little power play time. He's a minus four, four hits, couple blocks. So before I get into my statement, it was a difficult decision, apparently, by the Philadelphia Flyers staff. Kevin Hayes, who's basically the heir apparent captain since Claude Giroux got traded, had some statements to say after it happened. I want to let him talk first, and then I'll go into it and give you my thoughts. So here's what Kevin Hayes had to say after finding out that Keith Yandel was going to be a healthy scratch ahead of the game against the Leafs.
Yeah. I mean, playing that many games in a row is something that not a lot of people do. Obviously, it's why I was a streak for so long. I know someone's right behind him, but I mean, we put ourselves in this situation, having the year that we've had, not battling for a playoff spot. We need young guys out of college to come in, young guys in the AHL to see what they do. And I mean, it's I love this team. I love this city. I love this organization. It's decisions need to be made every day. Us players don't make those decisions. And it's truly on us, the reason why he probably had to sit out a game. And I can't say I agree with it, but it's the impact that Keith has on myself and the guys in that locker room is something that can't be measured. I mean, I know sometimes the media is all over him, but what he provides to some of these young guys in this team is something that no one else can do. I know he's one of my best friends, but the way he goes about his everyday life is truly professional. He's a role model for a lot of people. I think if you ask every person in that room what they think about Keith, you're going to get a lot of positive feedback. This guy's been playing since 2013. He hasn't missed a game since then, or 2011, and shows up to the rink today. He's the last guy to leave the rink. It's something that he strives to be. He's truly a professional human. And I mean, he's helped his team a lot this year, guys in that locker room.
Before I go into how I feel about this, and Kevin Hayes makes a lot of really good points. You know, it's not just his play on the ice. It's what he does in the locker room. He is a really good presence. He's great for the younger players and everything like that. So just statistically alone, Keith Yandel this season in 67 games has a goal and 14 assists for 15 points. He averages about 14 minutes and 20 seconds time on ice. He plays about a couple minutes of power play time and 96 shots and is a minus 39. Like, that's the number that stuck out to me. I'm like, whoa, that's not great. Plus minus is a stat that everybody argues about. I'm a little higher on it. And I kind of, the only reason I am is because I break it down to simplicity. There are a lot of other stats out there that are being used in terms of analytics and goals for and Corsi and you name it. And a lot of those stats are also, you know, they can be steered in a direction that don't necessarily give you the whole narrative on a situation. One stat, for example, is face-off zone start percentage, like where you majorly start your shift and what end of the ice do you start. And a lot of players are like, they start 70% of the time in the offensive zone. So a lot of their times their Corsi four puck control is normally in the 60-70% range, but it's because they start in the offensive zone. That's why it's so impressive when players have a defensive zone starting percentage of like 67-70%, but they control the puck and have a Corsi four of 60% or more. That means they start in their own end the majority of the time and end up spending the most amount of time in that shift in the opposing end. It's wildly impressive. But plus minus stat, you take away power play, right? The stat boils down to how many goals against are you on for versus four at 5-on-5. That's how I look at the stat. And Keith Yandel this season, because he's got 10 power play points, has been on the ice 39 more times when a goal is scored on them versus when he's on the ice when his team scores. 39 more times. he has been the victim of a goal going in on his net while he's on the ice more than when they score on their opponents. It's a very simple stat. It doesn't need to be the end-all stat. And especially over a small stretch, like over a 3-game stretch of a player's like minus five, you're like, okay, well, listen, during that 3 games, they have 5 points. A few of them were power play. A couple of bad bounces have gone in, right? Like, you can justify it. 67 games is a long, long stretch to decipher and get an understanding. And Keith Yandle's a minus 39. It's the worst on the team. But having said that, he was a free agent this year. Philadelphia chose to sign him. Made that decision. Knew what he was. Knew his age. Knew what he could bring to the table. Keith Yandle's never been great defensively. He's been an offensive puck-moving defenseman his whole career. He was that in Florida for some time. They knew it when they brought him in. They knew it. The players knew it. And he knew it. He's like, I'm not going to be out here throwing 150 hits over the course of the season. It's not who I am. I move the puck a little bit. I'm probably a second, third pairing guy. Probably a third pairing guy. And I'm going to help the young guys in this lineup. But I mentioned the minus 39. You know, he's not the only player in the minus 30s. James Van Riemsdyk is a minus 32. And this season has 30 points in 69 games. As a forward, 30 points, 17 goals. You want to hear something wild about this team? Every player on the Score app right now that has played a game for the Philadelphia Flyers, 5 of them are pluses. Kevin Connaughton, Travis Sanheim, Joel Farabee, and Cam Atkinson. Oh, and Ryan Ellis, who's played 4 games this season. So take out Ryan Ellis. 4 guys. And by the way, Kevin Connaughton isn't even a plus. He's just at 0, I think. He just happens to not be a plus or a minus. But of the entire Philadelphia Flyers roster, and even if we include Ryan Ellis, 5 of them are not a minus on the season. That says something. That's bad. And here was my argument. Yes, if a player is declining, right? The mindset is we got to get the younger guys in. We got to get in some ice time, give the older guys a bit of a break. But those older guys don't have what's happening going on. There's 11 at this point in the season, right? When they played that game on Saturday, the Flyers, I believe, had 11 games left in the regular season. 11. You couldn't have found anyone else to bench. Anybody else? Kevin Connaughton is 32 years of age. He's got 2 assists in 32 games, and he plays 12 minutes a night. You couldn't have benched him. He's got 11 more games to 1,000. 1,000 straight games. Do you know how insane that is? Yes, at some point, a player gets to a certain level where they just, you can't play him anymore. And I read a lot of that online, that Flyers fans were saying, listen, they should have done this last year, or they should have done this, whatever, or they should have done it as soon as you got the record. Sure. But they didn't. They didn't do it. They brought him on this season. They got him to the record. And then they kept playing him past the record. And then a random 13 games left in the season. 11 games before he hit 1,000. Literally at the 1,000 mark, bench him the rest of the season. Doesn't matter. Because now, John Ferguson Jr. and Mike Yeo are going to be known as the coaches who ended his streak, as the general manager who decided they were going to end his streak, and put in a rookie defenseman named Ronnie Attard, who's a third round pick 3 years ago, who may or may not work out. He's played in three total games. Sorry, he's played three games, not two. He's a minus six. He picked up his first career point and he plays 14, 15 minutes a night. You know what's going to be hilarious? If they put him back in, and I'm just checking the game logs right now. They did. You know, they played him April 5th. They put him back in the lineup. I didn't even see this. So they benched him against Toronto. Hold on a second. Because now everything I'm saying, but this is all reacting because I didn't see this. They benched him because of his play, and they got some younger guys in the lineup. They ended his streak at 989. April 5th against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Blue Jackets win 4-2. I'm seeing this right. April 5th. Today's the 6th. So last night, there it is, right there. Blue Jackets, 4-2 win over the Flyers. I didn't even friggin' see this. Philadelphia Flyers. Keith Yandle is in the lineup. Awesome. Awesome, guys. Just drives my point even more. Why not just play him? The remainder, just get him to 1,000. And then next year, you can cut ties. Oh, and the game they benched him was against the Toronto Maple Leafs. You don't think you could have used a little experience on the back end? No, instead, Ronnie Attard was a minus four that game. Awesome job. One, way to stunt your development of young players. Two, way to ruin a record in a streak of a player. And then three, you put him back in the lineup 3 days later. That flew so under the radar. I didn't even realize it till right now. God, that's awful. That's so bad. That's an awful look for the organization. An awful look for John Ferguson Jr. And an awful look for Mike Yeo. I don't know how much he had to play into it because he's now the, quote, interim head coach. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Just wow. I have no words to say on this matter anymore. I'm done. And now Phil Kessel is the NHL's active Ironman leader. He is now second with 968 games. He'll continuously play this season, and then, yeah, he'll probably play next year and beat it. Very short-lived. That's insane to me. That's absolutely insane. Anyways, we got to move on. This is going on a little bit longer than I want. I want to get to a couple other things. I just kind of want to point this out before I move on to the, I just want to talk about the Leafs a little later on, but this season has been absolutely wondrous. You've got two guys already in the 100-point plateau in McDavid and Draisaitl. You have franchise records being set by Jonathan Huberdeau. He set the NHL record for assists by a left winger with 71. He's up to what? 75? 76 now? Especially after yesterday's game? Yeah, he had 5 points yesterday, which is nuts. 73 assists. No, 76 assists. He's over the 100-point mark. He's got 102 now. Kirill Kaprizov set the Minnesota Wild record franchise points with 84. Austin Matthews tied Rick Vives' franchise-leading goal mark a couple nights ago in Tampa with 54. He has a chance to beat that tomorrow. And I heard this stat too. I heard this on 32 Thoughts, the podcast, because again, I drove to Toronto yesterday, so I listened to everything. And yesterday on the podcast, Jeff Merrick asked Elliot Friedman, said, how many players right now in the NHL are at a point per game clip? And he went through like years past and a couple years that were like 12. Then it was like 8. Then it was like 15. Then it was like 20. And you're like, wow. Guess how many this year? I recounted just to make sure. 46 players currently in the National Hockey League are at a point per game pace. Elias Lindholm is a point per game player this season. He's like ranked 40th in the NHL in points. Remember a few years back, it was like 2013 or something. I don't know when. But Jamie Benn led the league in points with like 84. 84. To put that in perspective, the season's not even done yet. And 84 points would tie Jamie Benn for 9th right now. That's where he'd be if the season ended today. Jamie Benn would be tied for 9th in league points. And he'd be tied with Mikko Rantanen, Artemi Panarin, and Roman Josi. A defenseman. Then there's Kadri at 83, couple guys at 82. Patrick Kane's at 80. Patrick Kane has 80 points this season. He's 15th in the NHL. 15th. Nathan MacKinnon and Sidney Crosby are outside of the top 20. That's absolutely friggin' nuts to me. Absolutely nuts to me. And the best part about this, too, is the fact that not only is scoring thriving, but we have a couple goaltenders who are putting up ridiculous seasons. Igor Shesterkin's like the runaway to win the Vezina. He's got a 214 goals against and a 933 save percentage. Frederik Andersen's also having a phenomenal season with a 926 save percentage and a 207 goals against. One of the most underrated seasons going on right now is Ilya Sorokin of the Islanders, the god-awful Islanders. He started 43 games. He somehow has a record of 22, 14, and 7. He's got a save percentage of 927 on a losing team and a 2.3 goals against. This season has been insane. It's been a season like no other. We're going to have like 5 or 6 guys, maybe more, with 100 points or more. It might even be, I want to take a look back right now. So we have 3 guys at 100 points. McDavid, Huberto, Draisaitl. Matthews is 5 away. Gaudreau's 5 away. Marner's coming up too. He's at, I think, 84. He might even have more. The scores hasn't updated yet. Kaprizov's at 87. Kachuk's at 85. Rantanen, but like there could legitimately be 10 guys with 100 points or more by the end of the year. And we're getting goaltending and we're getting scoring on the back end. Roman Josi might hit 100 points. Cale Makar is going to hit like 30, 35 goals. This is like the best we could have ever asked a season. We're getting elite goaltending from some teams. We're getting elite defensive play from some teams. And we're getting goal scoring left, right, and center from forwards. The NHL needs to market the crap out of this. Market McDavid and Draisaitl. Market friggin' Jonathan Huberto. It's not a secret anymore that he's one of the best players in the league. He's not the most underrated player anymore. But oh my God, market that dude. 102 points this season is insane. Market Johnny Gaudreau. Market Mitch Marner. Market these guys who are all top 10 in points and no one's talking about. Not to the level of Matthews and Draisaitl and McDavid. They need to be talked about more. It's absolutely insane. Before I leave here, I want to talk a little Leafs. I want to talk what Austin Matthews did. It was funny, before the Lightning game, John Cooper came out and said that, you know, he thinks that Matthews could score 70 in a season. In his last, I think, 48 games, he has 47 goals, and that includes yesterday where he did not score. 47 goals in his last 48 games. It's a stupid pace. He's on pace to score 60. He'd be the only guy on pace to hit 60. John Cooper said, it wouldn't surprise me if he hit 70. Last time a player hit 70 was Alexander McGillney and Timo Solani. They scored 76 in 92-93. The last 60-goal scorer was Steven Stamkos. Ovechkin did it a couple years earlier. I think Stammer did it in 2011-2012. Ovechkin did it either prior or 2 years earlier, and he scored 65. He's got a chance to break it in Dallas tomorrow. But the goal scoring that we're watching is just absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, it's on full display. I know all you're probably hearing is it getting talked about. I don't think it can get talked about enough. It's absolutely ludicrous as to how good of a goal scorer he is, that he is almost on pace to score 60, which hasn't been done in a decade in what is trying to be a more goal-friendly scoring league. He'll have a chance to break that. He's remarkable. He's ridiculous. Everyone's making fun of him for the fact that his 50th was an empty netter, and then the next game scores a hat trick in Tampa against arguably the best goalie in the league. Just insane. But last night was just, it was a barn burner in Florida. Toronto goes up 5-1. Florida storms back to take the 6-5 lead. Toronto ties it. Florida wins it in overtime. The Florida Panthers have scored their way out of problems all year long. They've got Aaron Ekblad coming back at some point. They'll have a goaltender, Bobrovsky, though I don't know how I feel about him in the playoffs, but that's another conversation. But I do want to talk the Leafs here. And last night was a big night for Toronto because Jake Muzzin came back into the lineup. And Jake Muzzin, who's missed a couple months almost now with a concussion. And before I get into this, I'm not going to overreact about the loss yesterday for the Leafs, because it happens, right? Florida's a good team. They're the best team in the Atlantic, in the East, actually. They've locked up a playoff spot. Toronto's on a back-to-back, starting their backup goalie, third string, really. And Toronto took 5 of 6 points in a road trip over their last three games and took 3 of 4 in a back-to-back against Florida and Tampa on the road. And when they played Florida twice, Tampa and Boston, they went 3-0-1 in the last, I think, 6 or 7 days. And I would have been a lot more like at ease if Toronto just lost the game like 5-2 and they just ran out of gas. But the problem was that they had a 5-1 lead and then stopped playing. But that's not even the problem that I want to point out here. The biggest problem mistake happened before the game. It was when head coach Sheldon Keefe made the decision to take out Ilya Lyubushkin and pair Jake Muzzin with Justin Hall. For those of you who don't know, those two played an enormous amount together through the early part of the season. Spoiler alert, they were awful together. They just don't mesh. They don't mesh well whatsoever. Their playing styles don't work. They constantly get crisscrossed with one another. It's never worked. I watched a highlight package yesterday and a couple screenshots came up. Of the 7 goals that went in, 6 of them were within a 10-foot radius of the crease. The one being the Radko Gudas from the blue line. Toronto is known for being soft in front of their goal. It's a reputation that they've had, I would say, up until this past season. And it really changed about halfway through when they made a trade with the Arizona Coyotes. And they got rid of Nick Ritchie and a pick. And they got back Ryan Dzingel, who ended up getting claimed on waivers, and some defenseman named Ilya Lyubushkin. All Ilya Lyubushkin has done is come in and established a physical presence on the blue line, has been paired with Morgan friggin' Riley over the last month, and has been a staple in what has made Toronto's defense way better. And yes, I know Mark Giordano was another piece there too, but the first domino was Lyubushkin. And the decision was made to take out Ilya Lyubushkin instead of Justin Hall and pair Muzzin with him, knowing that they weren't a good pairing. Of the 7 goals that went in last night, Justin Hall was on the ice for 5 of them. 5 of them. The 2 that he wasn't on the ice for was the Radko Gudas goal from the blue line, which it didn't matter who you were, the puck was going in because it went through a third string goaltender. And the overtime winner, overtime's overtime. You had a chance to win it. Tavares gets hooked, doesn't get called, goes down the ice, they score. 5 goals. And there were 3 screenshots of Hall leaning with his stick forward because he couldn't keep up with the defender in front of him. I'm not a head coach. Don't have the knowledge of one. I've taught goaltending, but I'm not a player coach. I'm not a head coach, anything like that. But you just know, like if you've got some hockey sense, you just know when one player is simply better and more impactful than the other. And I got news for you. Ilya Lyubushkin is better and more impactful than Justin Hall. Plain and simple. The Tampa Bay game, I'll give you an example. The game is 1-1. Tampa Bay is coming out with the puck from their own end of the neutral zone. Nikita Kucherov has the puck along the left boards. Ilya Lyubushkin comes flying in for a hit. Forces Kucherov to make a play. He throws it across the ice to the other side of the boards. Lyubushkin doesn't hit him, but his presence of him coming there causes Kucherov to turn the puck over. The Leafs get the puck. They go down. Bunting drops for Matthews. You know the rest. The goal is directly related off Lyubushkin cutting the guy off and being there has a physical presence, forcing Kucherov to panic and throw the puck. The Leafs turn back and score. 4 separate times, Justin Hall is standing in front of the net, not on his guy. He's slow. He's soft in front of the net. And unless he's paired with TJ Brody, who we heard from Mark Giordano and from multiple coaches, including Daryl Sutter and Sheldon Keefe, TJ Brody makes everyone he plays with better, including Justin Hall. I understand Jake Muzzin came back from injury, but it took 1 game. And everyone was saying he looked good. He scored. He was skating. He had like 7 hits or something. It took 1 game for Hall to not be with Brody. And by the way, Brody is not a good fit with Riley. Lyubushkin's a good fit with Riley. But it took 1 game to be like, oh, he's not very good. And he is Justin Hall. If Justin Hall plays for the Leafs predominantly for a significant portion of the first round of the playoffs, they're losing. They're losing. I'm dead serious. It sounds ridiculous right now. I am dead serious on this. I think it's that impactful. I think Hall is that bad, and I think Lyubushkin is that important, especially for playoff hockey, where it's physical, it's rough, it's tough. You are boxing guys out and battling for position in front of the goddamn net. And you took the best player on the Leafs D-Corps that does that, and you paired the guy you put him in with the worst player that could do that in Justin Hall. I don't think that's an overstatement at all. I will die on this hill that Justin Hall cannot be in this lineup. He cannot be. I saw a couple of people saying that Jake Muzzin is the problem and needs to go. No. You're getting confused because TJ Brody is that good that he makes whoever he plays with better. He has made Justin Hall look tolerable for a month and a half. It's a magic trick. Hall's bad play disappeared for a month because Brody made it so. The lineup should be for this team going into the playoffs, fully healthy. Riley Labushkin. They just work. They somehow work. Labushkin is physical. He's all defense. He allows Riley to be the offensive guy. He never goes up in the play. He stays back. He hits and he forces turnovers by being physical. It just works. It just does. He's been playing top 2 minutes since he got paired with Riley. I have no idea why he got taken out of the lineup. The second pairing should be Muzzin Brody. If TJ Brody makes everyone he plays with better, and Jake Muzzin looked okay yesterday, but Justin Hall was not good, put Brody with Muzzin. See how they look. I have no idea why that hasn't been a thing yet. Try it out. See how it works. Brody can play the right side. He played the right side for a lot of this season. Put him with Muzzin. And then your third pairing is Mark Giordano and Timothy Liljegren. I don't get it. I have no idea why this works so well. There's such a respect for Giordano to Liljegren, and Liljegren's game has shot up through the roof. And Giordano, that is a killer. Their analytical numbers are through the roof. And that 7-6 game yesterday, not even plus minus, because I think they were both plus three. They were not on the ice for a single of the 7 goals that Florida scored yesterday. Not one. You cannot break that pairing up. I'm glad that Keith didn't, but he made the next worst move and leaving Justin Holland and taking a Labushkin. It's Riley Labushkin, Muzzin Brody, Giordano Liljegren. Your 7th guy coming in is Rasmus Sandin, and your 8th guy at the absolute worst panic situation is Justin Hall. That's it. Labushkin and Riley have chemistry that it makes sense play-wise, but I don't get how it just came in and worked. Brody makes everybody better, and he will make Jake Muzzin even better. And Gio Liljegren just have insane analytical numbers together. The eye test, the statistics, the screenshots, everything shows Justin Hall is just not a fit in this playoff lineup. He's not a fit. I am legit scared that Sheldon Keefe has this mindset that he's going to play him and put him in instead of Ilya Labushkin. Literally, the reason they got him was to have a more physical defensive core. And they didn't play him in a game against Florida. I am genuinely shocked. I'm not a coach. I don't think that Sheldon Keefe is dumb. I feel like he's made a lot of really good moves. But if I'm Kyle Dubas, I am marching down there today and I'm telling him, don't you dare take Ilya Labushkin out of the friggin' lineup anymore. Because that was awful. 5-1. It'd be different if they lost like 4-1 or 5-1 and they just looked tired. I would get it. But they were up 5-1. They were playing well. And then they collapsed. I guarantee you right now, if Labushkin is in and Hall is out, they don't lose that game. 100%. I've never been more confident about a statement in my life. I would 100% die on that hill. 100%. But anyways, I've had multiple TED Talks today. I want to get to a couple news and notes. I want to give a quick shout out here to Corey Schneider. So Corey Schneider, this past Sunday, started for the New York Islanders. Right, Sorokin's hurt. They want to give Varlamov a break. Corey Schneider, the guy who used to play for the Devils, the Canucks, started a game for the New York Islanders. And hilariously enough, they beat the New Jersey Devils on Sunday to win 4-3. They extended their winning streak to a season-long 4 games. Corey Schneider made 27 saves in play in his first NHL action in 2 years. The last time he played, March 6, 2020, he was a member of the New Jersey Devils. I thought that was a super underrated story. As a goaltender, to go 2 years without not just a start, but a win, that blew my mind. I am super happy for Corey Schneider. I'm super happy that he was able to get a start on a team that's actually winning some games. And Corey Schneider, It's insane. A 2 year span. Now, last year with the Devils, he won 3 games. He started 11. He won 3 games. 2 years ago was his last win. If you go to his last 5 games, it just shows that game against the Devils where he won. Really awesome stuff. Super happy for him. Congratulations. Before the game yesterday, The Florida Panthers were the first team in the NHL to clinch a playoff spot. They won again, and it just kind of bolstered them. But as of right now, they are the only Eastern Conference team to clinch a playoff spot. The next team was the Colorado Avalanche. They clinched as well. Colorado right now sitting with 106 points. The Florida Panthers with 104. And I'm just assuming that the longer, by the time we do this next week, we could have multiple teams. Every team at this point basically could be locked up in the East. Maybe the West, but there might be a spot or two left ready to go, but the East might be locked up by next week, but it's pretty amazing to see. Colorado was the next team, and then I'm assuming the next two teams will be in the Atlantic Division, because, oh my God, the division's an absolute gauntlet, but congrats to Florida being the first team to clinch, and then Colorado very shortly after being able to do so. And then before we leave here, Ryan Getzlaf came out and made a statement that after this season, he plans to retire at the end of a 17-year career. I saw a post from SportsCenter that says Ryan Getzlaf, a Hall of Famer. He is the Anaheim Ducks all-time point leader. He's a three-time All-Star, a two-time Olympic gold medalist, a World Cup gold medalist, and a Stanley Cup champion back in 2007. He has played in 1,150 games and has totaled 1,013 points. It is a slam dunk that this dude's a Hall of Famer. In my opinion, slam dunk. He hit the 1,000-point threshold. He's a Stanley Cup winner. He's a multi-all-star, two-time Olympic gold medalist, World Cup gold medalist. He's hit every accolade you want to hit in terms of trying to look at a resume of a player who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. He hits every single accolade. And I think he is an absolute... I remember when he was like in the heat of things. Ryan Getzlaf was one of the most sensational passers of the puck that we had seen in this game. You know, he had seasons where he was just... like, it was consistently 66 assists, 58 assists, 50 assists, 57 assists, 56 assists, 50 assists, 58 assists. Like, the dude is just constantly, points-wise, 82, 91, 76, 87, 73. The dude was constantly putting up points. And I know the goal totals, he's only at 282, but this guy just seemed like he was always on the stat sheet. I remember a season I was playing fantasy hockey, and I had Getzlaf, and every time Getzlaf would go in the lineup because I'm like, he's guaranteed to get at least a point. And then he'd probably get you more. But he was such a lock every single year. He hit 20 goals on a multitude of occasions too. His best season goal-wise coming when he scored 31 in 2013-2014. He had the high season points-wise where in 81 games he had 66 assists for 91 points in 81 games. Dude was a machine, and in the prime of his career he was one of the best passers of the puck, and I think it's a slam dunk that dude's going to the Hall of Fame. Class act, one of the very few players that can say he played for one organization and one team only his entire career, which I always think that's a really cool perspective. Like Michael Jordan for a bit is always known as the Bull, but he did play with Orlando, he played with Washington. You know, Jerome McGinley is always a Flame, but he played for like Colorado and he played for the Kings and he played for the Bruins and kind of gets tarnished a little bit. There's very few players in the NHL who only play for one organization. And Ryan Getzlaf is one of them. So congratulations to him on an immaculate career when this season comes to an end. That is it for the podcast today. Thank you very much for listening. If you want to follow along online, it's at SD Hockey Podcast on Instagram and Twitter, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. It is Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Enjoy the rest of the week. I will be back on Tuesday doing this regularly. Until then, enjoy. That's a wrap.